Searching for killer asteroids from an African observatory, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. A Planetary Society Shoemaker Near-Earth Object Grant has, for the first time, gone to astronomers working from an observatory on the continent of Africa. We'll talk to one of its very successful amateur astronomers, Michelle Ori, in a few minutes. And later we'll learn about the first fairly disgusting meal ever enjoyed, if that's the word, in space. That and much more when we talk with Bruce Betts. First, though, a return visit by one of the little-known heroes of our search for near-Earth objects, or NEOs. Tim Spar ran the Minor Planet Center for many years. Now he is CEO of NEO Sciences, but still made time to chair the committee that judged this year's applicants for Shoemaker NEO grants. Among Tim's own discoveries are many NEOs, but also a moon of Saturn and a moon circling Jupiter. Tim, welcome back to Planetary Radio, and thank you once again for leading this work that has led to the award of a whole new crop of Shoemaker NEO grants.
You're very welcome. First of all, it's great to be back here. Obviously, I love to chat about near-Earth asteroids and the people doing that research. And in particular, I just really love the work that I'm doing for the Planetary Society.
Let's talk a little bit about those grant awardees this year. We've had many of these groups. What do you think of the current one? I mean, we'll be talking to one of your awardees, Michelle Ori, in just a few minutes.
I love this group of people, and I love the diversity. It's a huge geographic diversity. So we've got people in Serbia, we have our usual groups in the United States, people in Australia, and people that are doing some work in Morocco. That's who you spoke to recently. It's just a really nice distribution of things. And I think it also shows the international component to this whole effort.
We are also very proud to now have awardees who are based in Africa, on the continent of Africa, for the first time. Why is it so important that this is an international effort, or should be?
Probably the most important part of it from a discovery standpoint is having telescopes distributed around the Earth in longitude. And what this does is if someone finds something that you need follow-up on immediately, there are other facilities stationed around the world that can immediately point their telescopes there and observe it. And this will become more important as we find more objects that are going to impact the Earth.
Now, as somebody who's done a lot of observing and made a lot of discoveries yourself, how important is it for these, almost as a rule, underfunded so-called amateur astronomers to be able to do something with the money that they get from the society? I mean, to buy a new mount, to buy a new camera. I mean, the camera's pretty critical, isn't it?
Yes, the camera is essential to this, and the cameras are improving at an unbelievable rate.
Let's move on to talking about the structures that are in place globally to support the work of both professional and amateur astronomers who are doing this work. And of course, I bring that up because you, for so many years, ran the Minor Planet Center, which seems to be not just a clearinghouse, but I begin to get the impression as I talk to these astronomers, it's almost a center of community. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And we used to call it the nerve center for the asteroid community. Anyone in the world that does measurements of asteroids, be them positional measurements for asteroids and comets, so we determine the orbits, or now there is even a light curve database that's associated with the Minor Planet Center and the International Asteroid Warning Network there. So there's just so much work being done, and all of it goes through there.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that group, the International Asteroid Warning Network, IAWN, which I first heard about you a year ago when we talked for Asteroid Day in 2017, and you told me that it's commonly called IWAN. First of all, what is IWAN up to, and is that indicative of progress that's being made, not just to discover and characterize these objects, but to begin to deal with or to prepare to deal with the one that may be headed our way?
First of all, definitely a resounding yes that IWAN is growing, and there's really more interest in it now. For a little background, the United Nations General Assembly approved of the organization of the IWAN in 2013. It had been on the table for about a decade. you know, membership is open to people around the world that are doing current work in discovery or follow-up. There's also components for communication, et cetera. You know, one of the things I didn't talk about with our friends in Morocco, it's critically important to get other observatories around the world doing the work, because then it spreads the word, sort of like the gospel of asteroids is being distributed around the world. And then people can go look and say, oh, the United Nations is actually interested in this problem. They've organized a little bit around it. And I think it just, it really does make a community out of the NEO people. And that necessarily means we will all be better at communicating in the process.
Does this mean that you are satisfied with the progress that we're making as we, you know, attempt to identify and track all of these objects, or at least as close as we can come to all of them that do pose a threat?
Well, that for me, I'll answer that carefully. And I would quote my mom, who said, "You're doing great and you can always do better, Tim." You know, as a scientist in this field, the group of people we have now are performing exceptionally well. If I went around to them and said, what would you do if you had more money? They would say, we would do more work. In a very diplomatic fashion, we are doing great, and increased funding allows more surveys to be done. We completed the survey for the 1 kilometer and larger NEOs several years ago. On the heels of that, you know, we're suggested now to find all the 100 meter objects. And with current technology, that will take an awfully long time.
So we got a lot of work left to do. How far are we, do you think, from, let's say, tomorrow, someone announces a good-sized object, something that could take out a city, let's say, that is, there's a decent chance it's going to meet up with our planet in, oh, let's say, 10 years. Does that sound like a challenge, a threat that we are prepared to deal with?
Yes, so something like that, that is 10 years out, I think we would have a reasonable chance at deflection. The reason I say reasonable is that it can be difficult to launch missions quickly. The more lead time you have, the easier it is from a physics standpoint to deflect something. Because, you know, most of the asteroids have orbits of a few years. And so if you think of nudging it one time when it's very far out, maybe 5 orbits from impacting the Earth, it's not very hard to nudge it to have it miss the Earth in 5 revolutions.
It's like compound interest.
Absolutely. That is a great analogy. I'm going to steal that from you now, because
please
that's
do.
Perfect.
Please do. Yeah. Does it feel good to have made this transition? I mean, maybe you miss making the discoveries yourself, but now you are playing a big part in making a lot of people around the world aware of this challenge.
Yes, I actually feel very good about that. I had worked at the Minor Planet Center for 15 years, and I'm probably more useful as a worldwide ambassador now than I was in that position. That's just my idea on it. Maybe that's not necessarily true, but that's the way I feel. And I think that helping push this field forward is very important. It's actually, I believe in the mission of protecting the Earth from asteroids, period. And so I'm doing whatever I can to push that mission forward.
I got just one more thing for you, Tim. It's an invitation to convey a message to any of this most recent group of Shoemaker NEO Grant awardees that might hear this program.
Well, I would say keep doing what you're doing, because you're making us and the world proud.
Well said. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for all you're doing and for your great work for several years now, working with us on the Shoemaker NEO program. And good luck getting the good word out as well.
Thanks so much. It's an honor to be here. Take care.
That's Tim Spar. We've talked with him several times before. He spent many years as the director of the Minor Planet Center, the sort of center for near-Earth object research that is underway around the world. Now the CEO of NEO Sciences, LLP, one of the best-known people in the near-Earth object community, something I think that we can all be very grateful for. He is also has served once again as the chair of the Shoemaker NEO Grant Review Committee for the Planetary Society. And those grants have been awarded, and that work is underway with those devices and other improvements made to observatories around the world. And we'll be talking to one of those recipients, Michel Ory, in just a moment. This is Planetary Radio.
Where did we come from? Are we alone in the cosmos? These are the questions at the core of our existence. And the secrets of the universe are out there, waiting to be discovered. But to find them, we have to go into space. We have to explore. This endeavor unites us. Space exploration truly brings out the best in us, encouraging people from all walks of life to work together to achieve a common goal, to know the cosmos and our place within it. This is why the Planetary Society exists. Our mission is to give you the power to advance space science and exploration. With your support, we sponsor innovative space technologies, inspire curious minds, and advocate for our future in space. We are the Planetary Society. Join us.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan. There were 7 winning proposals in this year's round of Shoemaker Near-Earth Object Grants awarded by the Planetary Society. Some went to veterans who have received support in previous years. Others went to impressive first-time applicants with observatories from California to Serbia. We talked with Australian awardee Julian Oey last March. Now we turn to the work underway at an observatory high atop a mountain in the northern African nation of Morocco. One of the leaders of that project, which also includes astronomers based in Morocco and France, is Switzerland's Michel Oery. Michel very kindly joined me online a few days ago, kind and somewhat courageous, considering that English is not his second, but his third language. Michel Oery, welcome to Planetary Radio, or I should say bienvenue, and congratulations on the award of a Shoemaker NEO grant. Where are you today? Are you in at home in Switzerland or elsewhere?
Yes, I am in Switzerland, in Jura, in Switzerland, North Switzerland.
How often do you go to Morocco, to this mountaintop, where you have established this very successful observatory?
Usually I go two times a year in Morocco. My partner, Claudine Riner, I go most often because she is the technician and I am more the communications. So we are going over there in Morocco, 2,000 kilometers away from here, maybe 5 times a year.
It is a beautiful complex of telescopes, observatories that this National Center of Scientific Research has created there in Morocco. How was it that you and Claudine were able to partner with them to establish your telescope, which operates under this organization, which the two of you created, called MOSS, M-O-S-S. Only you will be able to pronounce this correctly as we speak, but it's the Moroccan Ukhamedon Sky Survey, and I'm sure I did not pronounce that correctly.
Yes, it's Morocco Ukhamedon Sky Survey. The beginning of the project is my first wife came from Morocco, and I was there each summer, and I have made in 2007 a trip tour of Moroccan astronomy, and I meet Professor Zouer Ben Khaldoun in University Kadiayad. He told me that he wants to make an observatory, a professional observatory in Ukhamedon, in a summit where they have made some experience with the sun on the atmosphere. In Switzerland, I tracked the asteroid from 2000, and we all say that we need to have a telescope in a region that have a most clear night. Here we have maybe 80 clear nights a year. In Morocco, in the Ukhamedon summit, we have 4 times that. I proposed to Claudine in 2011 to pick up telescope that was in Sousse, France, and to install that in Ukhamedon summit and to make this project, the MOSS project, Morocco Ukhamedon Sky Survey. Professor Ben Khaldoun is very interesting about this project. Since this project is established, we have in the beginning 2 dome in the summit, and now we have a sixth dome in the summit.
Very impressive. And I will refer anyone listening to an excellent blog post at planetary.org by my colleague Jason Davis on July 3rd of this year. It is an excellent, it provides much more information than we will be able to get to, including some images of the observatory, a beautiful video, actually, must have been taken by a drone. And there is the good photos side by side of you and Professor Ben Khaldun, the director of the observatory, as you mentioned.
And they have also a scope, and they make observation of special stars. They make photometry of stars and spectroscopy. That's their specialty. So they make long-term observation of stars, and we make our project of small bodies of solar systems. Usually we make observation together for special subjects. For example, when the asteroid and dormant comet Phaeton go close to the Earth, we do together observation with spectral and photometry with two scopes, their scope and our scope.
So this is quite a partnership. Let me ask you about the Shoemaker-Neo grant that you received and how it was used. I read that it was you used it to purchase a much better camera.
Yes, the old camera is this big one, and the new one is this big one too, but with a more large and a more sensitive detector. The main thing is we have field of view upgrade with 15%. The download frame, the full frame download is more quickly. This new camera is cooling better and have low noise in the reading.
And we'll put up a link to the actual description of this camera. I think it's quite fascinating, even though I am not nearly the astronomer that you folks are. I wonder, are your students aware of your successes as a discoverer of objects in the solar system? Are they excited to hear about your work?
Here in my small region, I was well known. My person is linked to the astronomy because I have discovered here in my region a comet, the 305P Ori comet. The comet now has my name. I have discovered this comet here in Switzerland in 2008. And since that, I was Mr. Comet or Mr. Asteroid or Mr. Astronomy here in my region. Okay.
That's wonderful.
So I studied physics in high school. And when I discovered this comet in 2008, during 1 week, I speak about comet with all my classes. Often, my students tell me, can you please speak us about your discovery, your comets, your asteroids? And I speak, of course, with great satisfaction about these discoveries because I have named 100 minor planets. And for me, it's important to make education about that, because great extinctions have been made with great impact with asteroids. In this environment, I think it's less person that speak about this problem here in Switzerland.
Well, then I have another reason to thank you for this work, because in addition to making these discoveries, you are sharing them. That is something that at the Planetary Society we feel very strongly about. As our boss said, we like to share the passion, beauty, and joy of space exploration. And it sounds like you are certainly doing that. Well, we will wish you the greatest of continued success. And it is good to know that that new camera that you got with your Shoemaker-Neo grant will be assisting you and your partner, Claudine Rene, in this work. Please tell her as well that we are very grateful and You both have our congratulations and best wishes.
Thank you very much. And I hope that this prize and the reconnaissance with the American community of asteroids will permit to the Morocco team in Marrakech to upgrade and to be well-known more away than just in Morocco. Professor Ben Khaldoun and his team make great efforts, but they have less money, and it's important that the project and what they do over there in Camden Summit is well known and to progress and to have a well-established reconnaissance. And I think the NEO grant is fine for that.
Time for What's Up with Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. He is being a chief scientist this week because he is up at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. What's going on up there?
Hi, we're having a mission readiness review for LightSail 2, going through the details and make sure we understand the spacecraft and the flight rules, etc., with our launch currently scheduled for no earlier than October 30th of this year. That's today, and then tomorrow we'll have an operational readiness test and or.
Best of luck with that, and now people know why you sound like you're in a hotel room in Central California, because you are.
could you tell that sound?
Obviously. How's the night sky up there? It's usually cloudy.
Actually, it was clear and beautiful last night. I saw in the early evening in the west, I saw Venus hanging out in this case near the moon, but the moon will do its pesky moving away thing. But super bright Venus in the early evening, low in the west, and then you can go across the sky to Jupiter looking really, really bright, and then Saturn, and then Mars rising after sunset, but it's still in the early evening, and Mars is, of course, approaching its opposition, opposite side of the Earth from the Sun, on July 27th. Closest approach on July 31st. In a few days, I'll have a blog all about watching Mars, as well as on July 27th, same day as Mars opposition, there's a total lunar eclipse, which is visible from throughout most of Europe, Africa, Western and Central Asia, the Indian Ocean, and Western Australia. And so if you are in one of those places on the 27th, you can actually see reddish Mars very close to reddish eclipsed moon. And then also we've got the moon hanging out near, as it moves across the sky, it hangs out near Jupiter on the 20th, Saturn on the 24th, and then, as I mentioned, Mars on the 27th. If you don't see the total eclipse, you'll still see a full moon near Mars. Whew.
Yeah, I know. It's still a very busy sky. Let me take you back, unprofessional that I am, because I should have asked you to tell people how they can learn more about LightSail, about all that's going on.
Sail.planetary.org. Go check out our website and learn about it. Jason Davis, who's covering it on a regular basis for us, will have a blog about today's meetings in the next few days. Okay, on to this week in space history. It was 49 years ago that humans first walked on the moon. Dun, dun, dun.
1 year to go to the 50th anniversary.
In 1976, Viking 1 landed on Mars. We move on to random space facts. That was eclectic. Apollo 11 was the second all-veteran, multi-person crew on an American mission, the first being that of Apollo 10. So all of Apollo 10 and Apollo 11 astronauts were veterans of spaceflight.
Guys who knew what they were doing.
Apparently. All right, we move on to the trivia contest. Speaking of guys in space, what did Yuri Gagarin eat in space? How'd we do, Matt?
Ick. Bleh.
We did terribly, or his food was terrible?
I just feel sorry for the guy after all that he had to go through, but he did get to be the first human in space, so I guess the worst things could have happened. I'm going to go straight to the person chosen by random.org as our winner this week. Some people guessed that he wasn't up there long enough to eat, but actually what I read is that the Russians, the Soviets at the time, wanted him to eat just so that they could see if he would choke to death, because no one knew if you could eat in space other than, you know, the dog biscuits they had given to Laika and so on. Here he is. It's George Stefan, one of our listeners in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. He said, on the 12th of April in 1962, Yuri Gagarin had a fabulous meal of beef and liver completed with a nice chocolate sauce, all served out of tubes. Yummy.
Tasty and so good for you.
And I take it that's a tasty and correct answer.
It's a tasty and correct answer.
Wow. George, congratulations. You are our winner this week, which means we will be finding out what size Planetary Radio t-shirt you'd like. And you're also going to get one of those 200-point iTelescope.net astronomy accounts from the worldwide network called iTelescope, a nonprofit network that you can use to do great astronomy anywhere. Jeff Sosby, I love this one. He's in Sacramento. Thus setting the standard for in-flight meals for decades to come. A random space fact from Clem Unger. Whilst Yuri can claim to have had the first bite in space, his successor on Vostok 2, German Titov, had the honors of being the first to be space sick and lose his lunch in space.
Quite an honor. Yes, I'm pretty sure I've discussed that in random space fact land before. Or in trivia. I think it was a trivia question. Who was the first person to hurl in space?
Oh, I think you're right. I do think that came up. Anyway, that came to us from Clem in Mornington, Australia, where we have many listeners who are anxiously awaiting your question that is part of the new contest.
All right. After Apollo 11, what was the next U.S. mission to fly an all-veteran crew? In other words, an entire crew who had all flown in space before. Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
You have until the 25th, that'd be July 25 at 8 a.m. Pacific time, to get us the answer this time, and win yourself a Planetary Radio t-shirt, also a 200-point iTelescope.net astronomy account. Thank you. As I said, I hope it goes great up there, and looking forward to the launch.
Thank you. Me too. And I also wanted, on a different topic, to, one, thank Tim Spar and all of our review panel from Shoemaker Neo Grants. Tim's a great guy who helps us get it done. Also remind people there's a cool Kickstarter going on right now with Planetary Defense Products, Kick Asteroid, with a great poster from Thomas Romer of Chop Shop. And so you can go to Kickstarter, search for Asteroid if you're interested in checking it out.
Excellent. And there's some fun video stuff there as well with our boss, Bill Nye. Thank you for that. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about what you would shove into a tube to eat in space. Thank you, and good night.
I think I'll reserve my tubes in space for toothpaste. That's Bruce Betts. He's the chief scientist for the Planetary Society, who joins us every week here for What's Up. Actually, the chocolate sauce doesn't sound so bad. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its watchful members. Mary Liz Bender is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan, at Astro.